Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, everybody. Cheryl Eckeson here. Welcome to another edition of Full Measure After Hours. Today, unbelievable and maddening stories of COVID relief fraudsters. They're stealing your tax money. Since the beginning, I've been trying to track the COVID relief money fraud. So many billions of dollars going out the door. In fact, there were trillions of dollars going out the door with very little oversight. And we've been looking at that since the beginning. I first interviewed the Small Business Administration Inspector General, Mike Ware, about 3 years ago on Full Measure. Most of the COVID relief funds intended for small businesses went out through the Small Business Administration to banks and then to, in some cases, people who were deserving, but apparently in too many cases, con artists and fraudsters. To date, investigators have flagged millions of fraudulent loan applications for COVID relief funds, applications that netted results for the fraudsters. They got the money. And as such, investigators have identified billions of your tax dollars that walked out the door to scamsters. That's my cover story on Sunday, April 28th on Full Measure. In today's podcast, an extended interview 3 years after my first interview with Inspector General Ware, he brings us up to speed. Can you explain just in simple terms what the Small Business Administration has to do with COVID relief funds?
Right. So the Small Business Administration was the primary vehicle by which our federal government dispersed funds during COVID to small businesses using primarily two programs, the PPP program, and that's the Paycheck Protection Program, and EIDL, the Economic Injury Disaster Lending Program.
And what would you say is an overview, before we get into specifics, of what you have learned in looking at how these funds have been administered and in some cases misused?
Right. I would say the number one thing that I have learned through all this is that the government needs a blueprint for standing up any emergency program. Really, they need a blueprint for standing up any program that requires the internal control environment to be seriously considered prior to a single dollar going through the door.
Because when an emergency happens, typically a program starts up, Congress appropriates money, it flows out the door without many controls, and then inevitably we find a lot of it was misspent.
Correct.
But you're saying on the front end there could be sort of a standing way of operating, so there would be controls on the front end?
This is true. But to be honest, why don't we have that? This should be in place for any program. The Pandemic Response Accountability Committee, the PRAC, of which I'm a member. This is going to be one of the legacy items left behind when they sunset in 2025. There will be a blueprint for this that we hope would be the marker for how government is supposed to be run in this regard.
Would Congress have to pass that blueprint to codify it, or how would that work?
Well, no. We would issue the blueprint as part of the PRAC or the greater council's community. But wouldn't that be a great thing if that happened?
Yes, it would. What are some of the top lines, again, before we get into some specific cases that you would like to mention in terms of sheer numbers?
In terms of sheer numbers, we put out the fraud landscape report last year. And in the fraud landscape report, we conservatively estimated that $200 billion in potential fraud existed in these programs. We only use the word potential because we haven't yet opened the case on every one of them. But it's important to understand that for every one of those 4.5 million loans that represented in that $200 billion, we would open a case if we had the resources and the time.
That's shocking. I mean, that I think your report said means at least 17% of the funds were dispersed to potentially fraudulent actors, more than $136 billion in EIDLs and $64 billion in PPP. So 17%, that's unacceptably high, isn't it, for fraud?
I would absolutely agree with you that it is, especially when you're talking about $200 billion.
How do you find out about most of your fraud cases?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. Initially, we had incredible partnerships off the bat with the banks. The banks, of course, have their own internal control structure set up and their own investigations divisions within the banks. And off the bat, we had like 5,000 complaints in a week. Off the bat, you have a problem.
What were the kinds of things the banks were saying?
Oh, these folks don't own a business. They never owned a business before. They don't
know where
the money's
coming from. They have to have a business to get a loan to help their small business.
Yes, you had to have a loan that was existing before the statutory cutoff date that was within the CARES Act.
And how else? You have a hotline as well.
We have a hotline. Listen, our hotline was, I'll call it sleepy now. Back then, I thought it was a big deal. I realized, wow, boy, was I wrong. 900 or so we were getting before, we got like 170,000 complaints in the first year alone. We're up to about 280,000.
And who are the people calling in to make a complaint to the hotline?
Your neighbors, employees that didn't get a dime from the employers that they knew once the public data came out, received money that was supposed to save their jobs. Those were the primary complaints.
Let's talk about a couple of the notable cases. One, I guess, was profiled in a TV show, American Greed.
Oh, I know the case. Mm-hmm.
Where it said stolen or fabricated employee identification numbers. 8 people submitted at least 150 fraudulent loan applications and got $18 million. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that case.
Well, in that case, that's one of those that stands out to me as the most egregious as well for a few reasons. Well, first of all, was the communication between the parties. Once we got our hands on that, it validated everything we were trying to explain to the administration at the onset, right? It validated everything. It said, throw as many loans at the wall as possible, and some are going to stick. They are not checking anything. And this was repeated across multiple cases as we would see it. The common thread would be, they aren't checking anything.
Who are the people that were submitting these loans and how did you find out about the loan applications and how did you find out about it?
We got a lot of that information off the dark web and when we would seize your communications. But anyway, on this case, the couple of things stood out on this case. One of them was we found duffel bags full of money buried in the backyard. So that was one. Secondly, once they were arrested, they were home on waiting for a sentencing with monitors, home monitoring, home arrest, and they fled the country. And with the FBI, we were able to apprehend them in Montenegro as they were trying a border crossing and brought them back. And I believe one of them got as much as 17 years or something like that on the sentencing, but I could be a little off on that. But they all got sentenced there. I think they're serving their sentences currently.
Were any of these people foreigners or are these primarily American citizens?
They were citizens, but they had their ties in foreign governments.
There's some other cases. I'm going to give you the chance to name any that you want to, but I'll name a couple that y'all sent to me. There was a New York woman sentenced for $9.2 million in COVID relief fraud. What can you tell us about that case?
So the cases all pretty much have a similar thread. Because it was basically the same, right? The lack of controls up front allowed bad actors to get in simply by fabricating IDs, stealing identities, making up businesses, even if it started after the statutory date, claiming they had the most employees possible to get the most money. They all basically running the same thing. And we would catch them on tips or on reviews. Keeping in mind, in those cases in particular, we had already weaponized the fraud landscape report by creating a fraud landscape database where we use link analysis as a primary tool there because we have information coming in from FBI criminal database, from the financial institutions, from all of the SBA lending data. There's a ton of things that come together in one place where we can identify bad actors by even by a specific zip code anywhere in the country. On top of that, we could identify it if it happened overseas, which, by the way, we will follow the money wherever the money goes. I had the great honor of representing our government in Nigeria because a significant amount of our money went there. So we went there to partner in an attempt to claw back as much funds as we could.
Did you get some back?
I can't tell you the exact number we got back, but a lot of money has been clawed back. To date, our office has clawed, along with our law enforcement partners. But I say that and say that these are the numbers attributed to the Small Business Administration's Office of Inspector General. With the assistance of the Small Business Administration, they've played a big, big role in this, and our law enforcement partners, we've pulled back over $30 billion to date.
How did the money end up in Nigeria? What were those scams about?
Oh, romance scams play a huge role in that. So they got people here to be a part of their scheme. And of course, the money went to the accounts that were there, which is how we were able to trace it.
Tell me about the case with a former NFL player.
Oh, Autumn read the same. They basically read the same. It's just a fabrication. And then
This is a guy who, if I remember correctly, and if you don't remember details of the case I'm asking you about.
That was the beginning.
I think we talked about it in the last story. But I believe he and maybe acquaintances and our family members got together and submitted, as you said, a lot of loans. Mm-hmm. Loan applications and did get a lot of money.
Right. And again, the use of link analysis allows us to find out who you were partnered with. And we're able to put tentacles on every one of those and bringing more and more folks. And that's how our focus was up front. Initially, the focus was on what are the most egregious and on fraud rings, criminal fraud rings and international actors. We have since our fraud landscape database has allowed us to be a lot more focused and allows us to run the full gamut of dollar amounts. So we're not just going after the big ones. We go after just about any amount, particularly if it falls in alignment with our priorities.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Are there any other cases you heard about that stood out in your mind, even though they all may have some similar components, but what was remarkable to you?
Yes. So using the database again, and the database is a big thing for me because it's allowed us to really focus in and hone in on our priority areas. But there are a couple that stand out. And one of them was a violent gang in South Carolina, where, of course, they were being investigated for all manner of crimes. But it was so much easier during the pandemic to attack SBA's pandemic programs. You're not going to be shot at behind a computer, I would guess, I would assume. And we were able to use our link analysis techniques to arrest over 36 gang members and bring them in. And another one was in Puerto Rico. And it's a case that's still having tentacles because of the link analysis that we're using. But utilizing the same techniques, we have arrested more than 90 individuals linked to violent gangs.
Wow. Was it easier to get these fraudulent loans in the beginning? And then was there a point fairly early on where better controls went into place?
So yes and no. So the yes, it was much easier at the onset. If you recall, when we met first, they really simply just did not have a proper internal control framework. And even back then at the answer, when we were on the ground floor of data analytics, we had identified 70 something billion in what, 30 days that were fraudulent. And so that was the case. But as time progressed and our reports started to go out more and more and the recommendations started to be made, the pivot was made probably in December of 2020, if I recall correctly. And when these pivots were made, simple things in terms of an internal control nature and Congress now allowing tax records to be utilized, because initially tax records could not be utilized. SBA could not do that. So some of the controls that they would normally have in place for their programs, they had to put those aside because of what the act required.
Is all the money for pandemic relief under the Small Business Administration finished, or are people still applying for and getting new money?
Those programs are over, particularly the two big ones that we're discussing today. They're done.
You've issued 39 pandemic reports with 103 recommendations for corrective action. Who has to implement the corrective action and where does that stand?
The agency's responsibility is to implement it, but we help them in terms of implementing with our follow-up process. They have implemented the vast majority of those recommendations. I have a pretty strong relationship with the administrator here. And I can honestly say that her actions have demonstrated her commitment to strengthening their internal control environment, making sure this type of thing doesn't happen again.
What are some easy to understand corrective actions that have been taken?
One of them was stop allowing people to change the routing information, bank routing information, after they've been approved, but prior to disbursement. That was a simple fix.
What does allowing that cause or open the door to?
Well, we were able to see, again, through the use of data analytics, that people were, the fraudulent account would have showed up as that's a good one, right? But after approval, you switch it to the yours now, the one that's not in any way alignment with any documentation that you may have provided. So that was going to that. It was even going to green dot accounts. So you're funding like debit cards with this money would have been an easy faucet to turn off.
What happens to the money that you've been able to claw back? Where does that go?
It goes back to the Treasury.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long will your enforcement efforts be up and going?
We have a total of 10 years because we were fortunate enough to have Congress pass and the president sign into law a statute of limitations extension. So now we got a 10-year statute extension from the last date of the criminal act. So it doesn't even start at the beginning. So the last date of when your criminal activity was, then we got 10 years after that to pursue.
And then if you could summarize lessons learned, what would you say? I mean, we sort of talked in the beginning about an overview, but what would be your takeaway for people watching this or listening?
Right. Lessons learned is, you know what, the primary lesson learned for me, and I've said this on the Hill, is that a proper internal control structure does not have to be sacrificed on the altar of speed. For some reason, within government, we think that requiring documentation to prove that you are who you say you are and that you're indeed eligible for our programs is a deterrent to people accessing the funds. And that it somehow slows everything down. And I'm saying that that is not true, particularly if you plan for it ahead of time.
Any other cases you want to talk about or anything else you want to add?
No.
Said your hair got grayer.
My hair
I didn't
did.
Notice.
My hair did. If you look back at our interview 3 years ago and now I saw it yesterday, it was glaring. I was like, oh my God, look how white my hair is.
That
become.
Means you've done a good job.
Yeah, thank you. The people that I work with, I thank them. And it's important to, again, to talk about these partners that we have partnered with. Because there's no way an office of this size could have the results that this office has accomplished if it were not for those partners.
You can watch the full episode with more details and information on some of these outrageous cases on Sunday, April 28th on Full Measure. To find a station near you, you can go to CherylAxon.com and click the full measure tab for a listing of stations and times, or you can just watch online at fullmeasure.news on Sundays at about 9:31 a.m. Eastern time. That's at fullmeasure.news. And if it's more convenient, well, you can watch replays there at fullmeasure.news anytime. We post the program around noon on Sundays after it airs on television. So again, fullmeasure.news, if you happen to be listening to this after April 28th, you can find it there now. And for even more on this topic, including details of some of the fascinating scams and some of the famous and infamous people convicted of perpetuating the fraud for COVID relief funds, check out my other podcast, the Cheryl Akison Podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast and that if you did, you will leave us a terrific review, subscribe to it, and share it with all your friends. And now you can support independent journalism causes by visiting CherylAkison.com and clicking on the store tab. I've designed some exclusive and original products, many of them thought-provoking and even a lot of fun, designed for independent and free thinkers like you, with proceeds benefiting independent reporting causes like the Cheryl Akison Ion Awards, cash awards to encourage independent, off-narrative, accurate journalism, both in colleges and by professionals. Slogans on some of the products at the Cheryl Akison store include, I need to find some new conspiracy theories, all my old ones came true, and do your own research, make up your own mind, think for yourself.